Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, of course, is joining us this afternoon via phone connection, where he is in London, England, and we are pre-recording this program since he's some 5 hours ahead of us. He knows all the details of what's taking place in the next 5 hours since he's ahead of us in time. He knows already all the news, and so we'll be just asking him what news we need to be aware of as we begin the program, since it is nearly midnight where he is. Tom, good afternoon to you. Thanks for taking the time, as always, to be with us.
Good afternoon. I'll just climb out of my time machine here.
Okay, that's good. Let's talk about first the weather. It's kind of cold here. What's it like there in London?
It's kind of cold here.
Really?
I think it's called winter.
I was, you know, those things slip right by me. Part of the global climate change effort, I never can remember. So,
I know. Being a Trump supporter, it must be difficult for you.
No, it's very easy. So this is winter there in London too.
You know, the climate denier.
No. I'm a season acceptor. We are in the midst of winter here. Tell me, is this unusually cold for you?
No, it's not unusually cold. It just feels a bit damp, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, England in the winter is very damp. It's very wet. And so, you know, it rarely gets below freezing, but it does get into your bones a bit.
Yes, well, we've got a nice cold weather here, and it's very windy, but it's dry, but still the wind is biting. So this is normal weather for you there in London. Let's talk now about the events that you're watching unfold there in London. Of course, Tom is joining us from London, England, so he's seeing all the media there. What's the leading headline there, as if I can't imagine?
Well, you know... You're expecting me to say impeachment, and that's right up there. But climate change, Davos, Greta Thunberg versus Donald Trump is also high on the agenda.
Ooh.
Having said that, the impeachment trial is being broadcast live here.
Oh, is it really? All right.
Yes.
So there is. Okay. Well, let's talk about the understanding of impeachment. Is this something that the European community appreciates and understands?
Oh, yes. Yes, they do have impeachment proceedings over here. You know, you can be impeached for things here in Europe. But also, they have the newspapers and radio and television have been describing ad nauseum exactly how the process works in the U.S.
I think the term ad nauseum applies. We're kind of sick of it, too. The question I have is, do they see this as really kind of a soap opera? By the way, I don't even know if soap operas exist in the European community, and we haven't seen very many of them here in the States. But do they see this as just sort of high dudgeon?
No. They see it as... a serious case. They see it as the possibility that the President of the United States has broken the law and therefore can no longer be president.
Of course, the question here is what law has he broken? And that, of course, is the debate among many of us. The other question, and I am impressed about the fact that the folks there in the European community see this as a serious issue, because, you know, Tom, one of the things that frustrates me is I don't see that either the elected officials in Washington, D.C., much of the media here in this country, the mainstream, the metro media, the large media, and I sadly think that many voters really do not understand the immensity, the profound nature of this event. Only the third time in American history that a president has faced impeachment proceedings.
Oh, it's a major constitutional issue.
That is.
You know, I mean, this is history.
It is.
You know, it is, as I just said, a major constitutional history. And lawyers will be debating it and arguing it for centuries.
Okay, now the question has to do with, what's the feeling there in the European community? Is it, have sides been taken?
I think sides have been taken, probably definitely not as much as in the U.S. But, you know, as I've said before, President Trump is not very popular over here. And so most people think that, he's probably guilty. But they are very, very shocked that the Republicans are so opposed to calling witnesses. How can you have a trial without witnesses?
But wait a second, Trump or
Republicans declare him innocent if you have not heard the evidence?
But we're going to hear the evidence, and
not from witnesses. But you'll be hearing it secondhand.
Well, similar to what happened in the Clinton impeachment. But the other aspect of
that's being denied a lot of lawyers.
Well,
I'm reading over here that the parallels with the Clinton trial or impeachment are not really valid.
The parallels are valid, and in fact there were.
Well, that's what you said. Yes,
I know.
I'm just reading what constitutional lawyers are saying.
Well,
and last time I looked, Lockwood, you did not have a degree in constitutional law.
But it doesn't need a degree in constitutional law. It's just the history and fact. The witnesses were never called. They had presentation of the interviews of the witnesses. And the other aspect, and this is one that's got many of us scratching our head, in the sense that the Republicans said they had, I'm sorry, the Republicans, the Democrats in the House of Representatives said that they had irrefutable evidence that was going to withstand any scrutiny whatsoever. Now they want to call additional witnesses, and many of us are saying,
Because Lockwood, they were blocked.
No, from calling the witnesses they wanted.
They wanted to call Mulvaney. They wanted to call Bolton.
But they didn't.
And Trump refused to allow them to testify.
But they could have subpoenaed them.
And now
they could have.
They could have gone through the courts, which might have taken years.
In which case it
never would have happened at all.
But it didn't.
They went ahead.
No.
Now. You know, one of them, Bolton, has offered to accept his subpoena and testify, and the Republicans won't allow him to do it.
But, Tom.
They won't allow him to give his account. How can President Trump claim he's innocent if he won't allow witnesses to appear either in his defense or otherwise?
But, Tom,
case of smoke without fire.
No.
I were President Trump, I would very much want these witnesses to be called in order to clear my name. Otherwise, there'd be a huge cloud hanging over him.
Oh, Tom. First off, the members of the House, impeachment investigators, said they had all the evidence they needed, and they were going to present.
No, you haven't answered my question, Lockwood.
But wait. They said they had all the evidence they needed. Now they want to expand. Now they want to try to expand the trial, and there isn't sufficient time. You know, it's interesting. You're talking about a cloud over his head. What about a cloud over the Democrats who are trying to remove a president in the midst of, and here's another aspect of it, in the midst of a campaign? And by the way, let's talk about here for a moment, Tom.
He should be removed.
Tom.
Whether it's in the midst of a campaign, in the midst of a war, or whatever. If the man broke the law, if he broke his oath of office, which is to defend the Constitution and the laws therefrom, then he should be removed for breaking his oath.
But Tom, bear
that's
with
the
me.
Law.
But Tom,
the
bear
law
with me.
Is
Tom, bear with me. Bear with me for a moment. Tom, wait a second. You've already determined.
Obviously you don't think so.
Yeah, Tom, you've already determined his guilt. But number one. But number two, the other aspect, yes, you have.
I have not.
Yes, you have.
My particular jury is still out. I want his guilt, Tom, or otherwise, to be determined beyond the shadow of a reasonable doubt.
Tom, we're going to have to go to a break. You're filibustering, but the other aspect of
Thank you.
This is important. This is a very important issue. And this is a fact that's really kind of another issue that's scratching our heads, in the sense that we're not really understanding why there is a need for additional witnesses in light of the fact that they have supposedly irrefutable evidence. But that, let's set that aside. The other aspect of this is, and this is one that I think is very distressing, in light of the fact that we know that members of Congress, both in the House and Senate, have predetermined they wanted to impeach the president even before these proceedings began. As a matter of fact, we know that in one instance, Representative Nadler said immediately after the inauguration that they would pursue impeachment of the president. So we already know that there is an agenda. But the
and
other
Mitch
aspect,
McConnell but, said he's innocent, but the, but, and then took an oath.
But there's another aspect. An he is innocent until proven juror. Guilty. Until proven guilty, he is innocent. But
no,
he
said the president is innocent, and then they both took oaths to be impartial jurors.
But the other, well, talking about impartial jurors, that's the other aspect
of it. And McConnell said he would work with the defendant's own office.
Speaking of impartial jurors, I find this humorous because you're so entrenched in this, and I might.
Mostly the rule of law.
Without
the rule of law, you have total chaos.
We do not have.
And that law must be transparent.
This is a political process. No, Tom, this is a political process, pure and simple. It is not a legal process. It is not a legal process. Otherwise, it would have been.
If it's a political, then it's a farce.
Check the constitutionality of this, Tom. It has been stated unequivocally it's a political process. And in the fact that you've got three candidates who are sitting on the jury wishing to replace the president, that makes it even more political. We're going to take a quick break on this one, give Tom an opportunity to cool down. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And he has, we've thrown a pail of cold water on him, so we're cooling down on this. Let's talk about Davos for a moment,
Lukewarm.
Tom. Let's talk about Davos. It's interesting. The president, of course, and the United States are criticized for, if you will, heavy-handedness, and yet the world economy really does depend on the United States economy, which is continuing to grow. So what is the outcome of Davos?
Well, the outcome of Davos, I don't think it's clear yet what it is. I mean, what it has turned into, Davos has decided, the organizers, that this year's Davos summit would focus on climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And you had basically a clash between President Trump talking about his prophets of doom, and Greta Thunberg saying that you've got to stop emitting fossil fuels tomorrow or today, this very instant. Now, I think, you know, the Times has described it. The master's the understatement that there was an exchange of veiled threats between the two figures. The Guardian went a bit further and said that, Trump has gone a step further to declaring himself the world's number one climate change denier and possibly the most dangerous man in the world. That was The Guardian. Yes, you're right. We do rely on the United States. We rely on the European Union. We rely on China as major engines of growth in the world economy. But what the climate change people are saying is that economy is one thing, survival of the planet is another, and there's no point in having, and I run the risk of overstating it, and I think the climate change people do as well, there's no point in having a strong economy on an environmentally dead planet.
Okay, so here's the question. You mentioned China. Is there a feeling that only the U.S. should be, throttling back its industry while the rest of the world continues forward?
No,
and then secondly,
but the problem is that the United States is actually opposing it.
Well,
it is withdrawing from climate change agreements.
Well,
and other countries are not. They are participating in them. They are fighting against climate change activists, whereas other countries are trying to work with them. The United States, as the country it is, politically, economically, militarily powerful, is standing on its own and fighting against all the others instead of taking a lead in solving the climate change problems. That is what people are concerned about.
Well, there, you've got the various states in the United States that are working on this climate change. It's happening internally.
We're talking about the federal government, the Environmental Protection Agency, things like that.
Tom, it is fascinating. The U.S. has more efforts in improving the environment and, I might add, taking care of issues of international care, such as fisheries, that other countries just continue to break, and particularly China among them. You know, we're at the point now, Tom, we just are tired of the charade. So let's move on. So after Davos, what else is happening? Is there anything going to come out of Davos? I mean, it's interesting. It's all focused on the United States, at least from our conversation. And many of us in the U.S. are just tired of it. So what else came out of Davos?
Well, the other thing that's come out is taxes. And this was more of a bilateral thing which came up during Davos.
Mm-hmm.
Between Mnuchin and the British, Boris Johnson, or Savid Javid, the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the decision, I think yesterday, of the British government to tax American digital companies like Google mm-hmm. and Facebook.
Right.
Steve Mnuchin immediately responded saying, if you tax our digital companies, we will tax your cars.
Okay.
And of course, you know, this raises wider issues about the possibility of a post-Brexit, U.S. trade deal,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, here we're supposed to be negotiating and having friendly talks with the U.S. and everyone's threatening each other with tariffs. Now, why are the British threatening these taxes is because digital companies base themselves, they operate in Britain and they operate all around the world, as we know, but they will base themselves for tax purposes in countries which there is little or no corporate tax.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will remit those profits back to headquarters in the U.S. And so the billions of pounds which they're earning in the U.K. and France and Germany, no tax is paid in those countries by the digital companies. And the European countries in Britain are getting a bit tired of it.
Well,
so that's the reason for it.
Okay, and that's an outcome of Davos.
It's not an outcome of Davos. I'm just saying that the British saying they want to tax it, and the threat from Mnuchin is an outcome of a bilateral in Davos.
All right. Well, you bring up Brexit. Let's talk about Brexit for a moment. What is the future of Brexit at this point?
Well, the future of the Brexit is that they're about to, at 11 p.m., midnight in Brussels, 11 p.m. here in Britain, they will effectively leave the EU.
Mm.
Now, when I say leave the EU, they have agreed a political framework, and that's on the 31st of January. They will have agreed a political framework, but there are a lot of details yet to be negotiated. And the trade talks in those details are due to last until the end of this year. That's the 31st of December. And the British government has said they have to have an agreement by then. Otherwise, they will simply pull out without a trade deal. Now, during those trade talks, they can also have trade talks with the U.S. And with other countries around the world. And so what you're going to be seeing is a lot of simultaneous trade negotiations taking place with the U.K. at the center of them and various other countries in Britain trying to balance the best deals they can get to survive these post-Brexit world in the best possible circumstances.
Tom, we've talked about the economic impact of Brexit, and of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. We're going to get to other items here in the UK in a few moments. But Tom, we've heard your concerns about the issue of the economic impact of Brexit on the European community and particularly the United Kingdom. What's happened? A year ago at this time, people were queued up at gas stations. They were you were concerned about the issues of the ports. You had concerns about everything from pharmaceuticals.
That was for a no deal Brexit.
Okay.
And we do have a deal as a sort of deal. Yesterday, another 500 jobs went in the car industry, which was related to Brexit. Before Brexit, the economy was growing at 3% a year. That is 3 years ago. Now it is shrinking at a third of 1% in the last quarter. So we're just on the cusp of a recession. It's expected to shrink a bit more. Economists are divided as to how much, but they said that if we were staying in Europe, we would probably grow at about 2.5% a year. It's probably going to be some tough times. One thing that's very important is whether or not our trading rules are in alignment with those of the EU, because if they're not, then there'll be non-tariff barriers, which we'll have to take into account. But of course, if they're not in alignment with the EU, or if they are in alignment with the EU, then they would probably have to be in alignment with the US and other countries.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a question of where are we going to get most of our trade in the future?
All right.
At the moment, still, 48% of Britain's trade is with the EU.
Okay, the other quick question, we've got to take a quick break here. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, what's happening to the European community's economy, real quickly, on the as a result of Brexit?
It's kicking along at the bottom.
Okay.
It's just about breaking even.
Okay.
It's not really growing.
All right.
Or very slowly. Having said that, we're talking about France and Germany. But other countries like Poland are growing at about 4 or 5%.
Okay. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World.
LookAhead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to LookAhead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. This portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule and to give him time to calm down. We had a very intense conversation at the opening of the program. Tom, let's talk about Megan.
I can't help you if you can't speak,
well,
right?
No, it's just we will explain it to you. Megan and Harry. I understand.
Who are they?
They're losing their. That's right. I understand they're losing their title, and I'm curious what, in light of the fact that the British government and the economy, pardon me, the well, yes, the British government has been underwriting the royalty in the country. What's the feeling now that Meghan and Harry are leaving?
Well, I think there's a lot of sympathy with Harry and very little sympathy with Meghan.
Really?
Is how I'd sum it up. He's quite popular. They realize that he is a special case. His mother was almost, you could say, hounded to death by the paparazzi when he was a young lad. And this has affected his life enormously.
Okay.
Meghan, on the other hand, is regarded as a bit of a gold digger went into this royal marriage with her eyes wide open. And if she didn't like what she was going to get, there were plenty of warning signs, and she should have not gone through with it, is the general feeling. The other feeling is that they're going to end up extremely wealthy.
How so?
Well, I mean, there are going to be people buying Prince Harry porridge and Meghan perfume all around the world. You know, they're going to be cashing in on the brand.
Here's the
question. They'll be able to charge $500,000 for a personal appearance.
But wait a second. Tom, hold on. Real quickly. I understand they have trademarked the name Sussex. The Sussex.
That's right. They have.
And that's allowed?
That's allowed.
Wow.
They have trademarked the name Duke and Duchess Sussex. That's their name.
Okay.
They are still the Duke and Duchess of Sussex.
Oh, they are.
What they have given up is their His Royal and Her Royal Highness titles.
Okay. And also their income, their allowance.
Yes, they've given up their civil allowance, but they're not going to need it. As I said, they're going to make a fortune.
Okay.
Now, they're not going to make a fortune tomorrow.
But it's fine.
Prince Charles is going to bankroll them until they do.
Okay. Let's move on to other items. I want to chat about this in relation.
Well, he, by the way, earns about $400 million a year from his company, the Duchy of Cornwall, earns $400 million a year.
Ooh.
So he can afford to bankroll them. Now, all the money that he earns goes to charity.
Okay. Here's a question. He has his own company.
Yes, he has his own company, the Duchy of Cornwall, and all the money, all of its profits go to charity.
Wow, that's something a lot of people are not aware of. All right, let's move on to other items. I want to touch on this one because it's now growing a concern. The coronavirus, the Chinese virus you note here, is that how it's perceived, that it has its origination
in
China?
And here in the U.K., they have set up a special entry point at the airports for people coming from countries where they know the coronavirus has struck, and they have to go through special clearance. Last time I checked, which was a couple of hours ago, I think there were 690 known cases and 6 deaths, but they estimate that if there's 690 confirmed cases, there's several thousand people who've probably been infected.
Okay, the question goes back to economics.
The World Health Organization is meeting now to discuss whether or not to declare this an international emergency.
Okay, there's been grave concern, and of course we've seen this even in the stock market in the United States, where stocks actually declined yesterday as a result of the concerns associated with the coronavirus. Is there a concern that this is going to have a major impact, particularly in the European community, where there's transportation and travel is so rampant between countries? And of course, China has a very close relationship with the European community. We've talked about that a few minutes ago.
So far, there are no reported cases of coronavirus in Europe.
Mm.
Everyone is keeping a close eye on it. They're working very closely with the Chinese authorities. The Chinese authorities did not cover themselves in glory with the SARS virus, but they are apparently making up for it in the help they're extending towards international agencies and other countries regarding the coronavirus.
All right. Let's talk about other items here. The topic of Iran and the fact that the Iranians shot down a Ukrainian airliner a couple of weeks back, denied it. Now, by the way, they didn't shoot it down with one missile, but rather two missiles. The question goes...
Well, they wanted to make certain.
Well, they did. They did. Unfortunately, they did. Let's talk about the impact this is having on relations with Iran, and what does this mean going forward?
Well, I think the most interesting thing this week, two things. One thing I said in my blog last week, I don't know if I said it in the podcast, is that and it's been confirmed by a lot of opposition people in Iran, and that is the Iranian middle classes and the opposition are angry because of the hypocrisy of the regime over this incident. They just don't like being told that their government is a liar.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's one thing. The other thing is that the Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader, in his Friday sermon, came out strongly in support of the Revolutionary Guard, who were behind the shooting down of the plane. He said that they were the Middle East freedom fighters, and they were the fighters without borders.
Yeah.
Now, this means that he sees his bread as being buttered on their side, that he knows that in order to stay in power, he has to have the support of the Revolutionary Guard. and not the middle classes. And that is the situation at the at the moment.
Does that not concern the European community insofar as the willingness on the European leadership to broker a deal with the Iranians, particularly the Ayatollah, in light of the fact that they really have no care for their general population?
Well, when you say their general population,
I'm talking about
a big proportion of their general population, not all of it, because the middle class is the middle class; it's not everyone.
Yeah, but it's the largest population group.
Yeah, it's like saying you only support Trump supporters, or you only do what Trump supporters want.
No, there's no comparison, and I disagree with you. There is no comparison.
Right.
But here's the quick question: we're looking at an elite group of this is a military organization. They're running the country, and I'm really kind of unnerved by the fact that the European community hasn't stepped up and said, we've got some problems here.
It backed out. It served notice that it wants to back out of the Iran nuclear accord. And I would think that one of the factors is not just the fact the Iranians are going forward with their enrichment plans, but one of the factors is the shooting down of the Ukrainian plane.
Mm-hmm.
They are finding it very difficult to talk with the Iranian regime. You're absolutely right. But they do not want to take the same hard line that the Trump administration is taking. They want to at all times try and keep the door open in order to avoid a disastrous war.
Well,
what's wrong with that?
Well, I don't know that we're going to avoid a disastrous war. And here's the other aspect of this, Tom. And
but you
this
should
is
try to, shouldn't
Tom.
You?
Tom, we have seen the results of appeasement.
You want a war?
We have seen we have seen the results of appeasement. And I'm again, in light of the experience that Europe has had as a result of World War II,
I think technology has moved on since 1939.
It's not technology.
A war with Iran would be far more dangerous than it was in a war with Germany in 1939.
Well, you can argue that case all day long. It doesn't appeal to me, and that doesn't appeal to a large number of people in this country. We recognize that when you are appeasing a bully, you're just feeding a bully. Let's move on to other items.
Do you still have Trump as president?
He's not a bully. He is, by the way, doing the best job of standing up to bullies since, well, frankly, Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. Let's go on to Berlin, talks on Libya and Syria. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's very interesting. They were in Germany, hosted... Well, the one on Libya was hosted by Angela Merkel, which is very interesting because Germany doesn't really have much leverage in Libya.
No.
And some people say that's its strength because it could be more neutral. And some people say that's the reason why what was agreed in Berlin is not going to work. Now, what was agreed? What was agreed was that the external powers... that is, those countries outside of Libya would stop sending troops, drones, weapons, money to the fighting factions in the belief that if these people stop sending things, then the two factions wouldn't have anything to fight each other with and would be forced to compromise.
Well, here's the question. Isn't Russia engaged actively in Libya as we speak?
Yes, and so is Turkey. And both of them are competing against each other, and both have been promised huge oil contracts if their side wins. And it's difficult to imagine that they would back down because they have so much at stake. But both Turkey and Russia have signed this agreement.
They've signed this agreement. Is there a feeling that, and keep in mind, Syria, of course, has been embroiled in a civil war.
This is Libya. This is Libya we're talking about.
I know, but you said, I've got to know here, talks on Libya and Syria.
Yeah, they're talks on Syria too, which is separate.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Well, very quickly, tell us about what's happening in Libya then. I'm sorry, Syria.
Syria. Yeah, it's confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
One starts with an L and the other an S.
Right.
In Syria it's different. These have been secret talks, and it hasn't involved any government leaders. It has involved instead society leaders from Syria. Now, that is people who represent the Alawites, the Yazidis, the Christians,
right,
the Druids, the Muslims, the Sunnis, the Shiites, etc. And the idea is that if these groups can agree amongst themselves not to support the fighting, they would have an impact on the various governments.
Okay.
Now, one thing they've agreed in their agreement is that they will not take any revenge attacks. They will not commit any revenge attacks on another group or ethnicity for any attacks committed against them.
Well, we will see.
And that will, you know, those attacks are a big factor in divided Syria.
All right, we're going to take a quick break on that. What's going on in the Middle East is so confusing, you do need a scorecard. We have with us this afternoon Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Two items I want to chat with him about very quickly, coming up in just a moment. The U.S. helping to broker a deal on a controversial dam in Ethiopia. And then we'll wrap it up with 20,000 people apparently apply to live on a remote Irish island. I'm curious why. Is this another rendition of Survivor? You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. Wrapping it up with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Two items to talk about, Tom, very quickly. One having to do with a controversial dam in Ethiopia and the U.S.'s arrangement of participation in that. And then the 20,000, is that people applying to live on a remote Irish island? Let's start with
No, it's Irish wolfhounds.
Ah, Irish wolfhounds. Really?
No, people.
Okay. Let's talk here for a moment about the U.S. helping to broker a deal in Ethiopia.
Yes, a triumph. A possible triumph, it's still early days to say with certainty, a possible triumph, foreign policy triumph, for the Trump administration. Stephen M. Mnuchin again, he was the one chairing this. Now, what's at stake is the Nile River and electricity for Eastern Africa. The Ethiopians have been building, it's 80% complete, something called the Grand Renaissance Dam. It's costing $4 billion. And they're building it in the upper reaches of the Nile, on the Blue Nile, in fact. And about 70% of Ethiopians have no electricity. This will enable all those people to have electricity. And also enable Ethiopia to export electricity to Eritrea, Djibouti, Kenya, Sudan, and South Sudan. But it will also affect the flow of water
to the Nile,
down the Nile. And Egypt gets 90% of its water from the Nile.
Right.
And so they're worried about losing their water supply.
And the U.S. is playing a role in brokering a deal between the countries.
Yes. And what they've done is they have come to a deal whereby the dam will be filled, or the lake, the reservoir behind the dam, will be filled very slowly so as to minimize the effect on the river downstream.
Okay. All right. And of course, that's a very arid portion of the world, so I'm intrigued by this. Let's move on to another item. This, of course, a remote Irish island, 20,000 people applying to live on the island. How many people will be allowed to live on this island, and where is it, and why would so many people be interested?
Two people
will
be allowed to live on the island.
Okay.
Their job will be to look after a cafe where visitors arrive once every blue moon to have a cup of tea.
Now, a blue moon is when we have a full moon three times in a month.
Yeah, well, whatever.
And, yeah, I just want to know.
it's way off the west coast of Ireland, and there are two people there now. They've been there long enough, they reckon. They probably finished writing their 200,000 words memoirs. And so they put it up on social media, and they got 20,000 people wanting to take over from them from all around the world, including North Carolina.
Oh, they've got my application.
They did.
Okay, what is the name of the island? Do you have that handy?
Blasset Island.
Okay.
B-L-A-S-S-E-T-T. Or is it one T?
I'm not sure.
It is one T.
Okay, and where is it again? Where and off?
It's off the west coast of Ireland. And I don't know if you've ever been to the west coast of Ireland, but that's a pretty dismal place.
Yes, it is.
It's wet.
Yes, very wet.
Windy.
Yeah, all right. And you would run a little cafe there. Well, if you get the job, we will be, planning to visit.
Oh, there's no electricity. There's no electricity. There's no running water. So we'd lose contact, Lockwood.
It'd be very sad. Well,
nobody tell you how Trump really feels.
No, we would not have the opportunity to share and impart the facts with folks such as yourself. Tom, as always, wishing you the very best. Thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, good friend.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, possibly relocating to an Irish island. Stay tuned for more here on the Talk Station.
I'm sure your listeners would love.
Some would, yes.
Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.